This is Senate Committee on Judiciary. This is April 28, 1989, 1 p.m. in hearing room 343. A public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 977, Senate Bill 1092, House Bill 2667. Work session on Senate Bill 24A, Senate Bill 404, 614, 719, 1141. Public hearing on SJR 10, SJR 17, and Senate Bill 1044. Public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 751.
We have a number of bills up for work session today. We're clearing off some of the issues that we've had that have come to us from other committees that need to move on. The first bill is Senate Bill 24A. It's up for work session today. It has come from the Government Operations Committee, I believe, and it is at the request of the County Engineers and Surveyors, sponsored by Senator Otto. Catherine, we have amendments. This is here because it dealt with the issue of penalties, etc. Catherine?
Correct. This bill, first of all, there's an error in the summary which will be fixed when it is reprinted. Second, you have a set of dash A5 amendments in a hand-engrossed bill. The amendments delete the criminal penalty provisions which were changed. Actually, they were increased by the bill. However, the requesters reviewed the provisions with their counsel and determined that the existing criminal statutes, specifically criminal mischief, provide adequate remedy, and so those criminal provisions have been deleted from the bill. That's what the amendment does. The bill also, which we do not touch with the amendment, has a private right of action with costs and attorney fees to prevailing parties and allows for recovery of the cost of restating monuments that have been moved.
This is a nightmare.
Now, Senator Hill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move the SB 24-A5 amendment.
Yes, Senator Hill has moved Senate Bill 24-A5 amendments dated 4-25-89. Are there objections? So ordered. Senator Hill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 24-A to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Hill has moved 24A to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendations. Discussion? Call the roll, please, Pat.
Senator Brenneman? Rockman? Gransky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer? Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Let's take up Senator Cairns is here on Senate Bill 1092. That is also a bill that got snagged.
Yeah, nobody seems to know why it's here, and a good bill, and would ask you to move it along. For those of you who served in the last session, 1092 bans the sale, distribution, use, and testing of either chlordane or heptachlor. If you want, I can give you the 50-cent version of what those substances are and why we want to do that, or respond to questions.
Is this in the right committee?
Well, that's the problem. It has come out of the Ag Committee, and it probably isn't in the right committee, and it's an inadvertent thing. So the chair would move that we send it to the floor and have whomever was scheduled to carry, Senator Cairns was scheduled to carry it.
Senator Faulbush.
Faulbush out of the Faulbush. Out of the Ag Committee, and I would move that to the floor and do pass. Giving you an opportunity to vote on it there.
I assume maybe there's something bad about these chemicals.
Without getting into
the 25-cent version. Senator Gransky, chlordane is a chlorinated cyclodine pesticide. It was restricted over the years since its invention in 1948. Restricted over the years, and finally, all food uses were canceled by virtue of the fact that it was an exceptionally dangerous material. It attacks the neurological systems of people, animals, etc. One of the uses that it remains for is a termiticide. And the reason why it is, has been so popular is that it has a 15 to 20 year half-life. In other words, if you were to inject it around your home, you would come back in 15 or 20 years, you would find that you would have a significant amount of that active material still working. The problem is that there's virtually no way to get rid of this material, and there's no safe way to use it around the home. It has been banned in a number of states. The entire European economic community, Japan, Finland, we're simply saying it ought to be banned here too.
Senator Hill.
Didn't it come out of committee unanimously?
Yes, I believe that's correct, yeah. We passed the bill 2 years ago. It got caught in some crunch in the House last time.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Any need for that? Call the roll, please, Pat.
Senator Gransky?
Aye.
Senator Hill?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer? Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much. Okay, let us move. That it will be the chair's intention to take up 10:44, about 3:15. So if those of you here are waiting for 10:44, we do have public hearing scheduled on Senate Bill 10:44. That is a bill that Catherine has been working on. We will take that bill up about 3 o'clock, 3:15. Labor committee members have been excused till 3:30. I've talked to the chair.
Thank you.
We'll move on. Deal with a quick work session now until we get Senator Springer and Jack. Let's Senate Bill 404.
Senate Bill 404.
Go ahead.
Is at the request of the Department of Justice for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. This is the bill that we just recently heard, a few days ago, in fact, that would change the criminal expungement statute so that persons convicted of the enumerated crimes in the bill, when they can be defined as child abuse, would no longer be able to have those records expunged. In other words, a person convicted of these particular crimes would have that conviction on his record basically for life. It was, if you'll recall, there was testimony submitted by Deborah Wilson, the assistant AG in charge of the family enforcement section.
Do we have amendments?
No, there are no amendments.
We did have opposition from the defense attorneys.
Yes, Steve Anderson from OCDLA made some comments regarding the bill.
This bill does deal with C felonies. A and B felonies are currently non-expungible. Is
that's
that correct?
Correct.
Senator Hill.
Yes, would you like a motion?
I would take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 404 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill has moved Senate Bill 404 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Springer, this is the non-expungement of records. You had a question about juveniles.
Juveniles, they're still in, or
juveniles are still in.
Okay.
The bill is not amended at all.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to give you a chance
you.
To sort of.
Right.
Any discussion? Call the roll, please, Pat.
Aye.
Senator
Hill?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Aye. Thank you. Senate Bill 614.
Senate Bill 614 has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It is at the request of various members. This is the also one that we heard, I believe, earlier this week. You recall Mr. Fuchs from the Juvenile Services Commission, as well as Tom English and a couple other folks testified. It would establish two pilot programs to aid high-risk youth. there's a request for $185,000 from the general fund. Specifically, you'll recall there was testimony that there are things that can be done for youth and children ahead of prior to the time that they start to get in trouble, and that is what these pilot programs are set up to address.
Any discussion?
Any discussion? Yes, Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 614 to the Ways and Means Committee for due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill has moved Senate Bill 614 unamended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please, Pat. Oh.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, just on line 9 on page 2, there's just a typo. I don't know if we need to deal with that. There's some type of a symbol in drug.
There's the beginning of a bracket in the word.
Yes.
Forgot to mention that.
Okay, let's...
Move to strike it then.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that we can do that without amendment.
All right.
As a Scrivener's error, as it passes through, we'll make a note of it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Call the roll, please, Pat.
Senator Gransky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shanahan?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye. And I want to make note that this is this one is a product of two... Certainly, interim committee, Judiciary Committee work Senator Hill chaired, and this bill has been in the making for some year and a half at least.
Yes.
Thank you. Senate Bill 719. Let's just go right down.
Senate Bill 719 is at the request of assorted members. It is the bill that would allow a juvenile court to order parents of basically delinquents to participate in drug and alcohol treatment. You'll recall that we had testimony from, I believe, an assistant DA from Lane County who was in support of the bill, Richard Carlson. The significant language is on the last page of the bill, page 4, down lines 21 through 25, that adds in the amendment that if the court finds that the parents or guardian's addiction to alcohol or controlled substances has significantly contributed to the circumstances bringing the child within the jurisdiction of the court may order the parent or guardian to participate in alcohol or drug treatment programs if the court finds that participation would be consistent with the best interest of the child. That's the operative portion of the bill.
Senator Springer.
Like motion?
Certainly would. Oh, we had. Go ahead, please.
I don't think there are any amendments proposed.
No.
Further.
No.
None.
Okay, or any outstanding issues? If not, I'd move the bill to pass the floor.
Senator Springer, move Senate Bill 719 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as it comes to us unamended. Discussion? Call the roll, please, Pat.
Senator Gransky?
Aye.
Senator Hill?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Senator Springer, you'll carry this one?
Please, Steve. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senate Bill 1141.
Senate Bill 1141 is from our Committee on Human Resources. This is the bill that would allow a person who's been picked up on, I guess what's usually termed a police hold for mental reasons, to have that contact with police officers expunged after a particular amount of time passes. You'll recall that we heard testimony from Lieutenant William Bennington, who is the commanding officer of the Records Division of the Portland Police Officer. He testified that he had occasion to check into the statutes and found that there was no way for a person to have this information taken off their record. There have been amendments offered, and I'll pass those out to you now. The amendments are from Lieutenant Bennington as well, and they seek to clear up some relatively minor problems that we can discuss here in a moment. And in general, what the amendments seek to do is make the statute track a little more closely with the adult expungement statute. They require a little bit longer waiting time if the person was actually committed. And they also specifically provide that the person is entitled to treatment as if he had never been picked up when, in fact, this order is entered. It also provides that the benefits of this provision are not available if the person is, in fact, charged with a crime. So this only applies to people who are picked up on civil holds. And as I said, the amendments are offered by the witness we took testimony from.
Madam Chair?
Senator Shoemaker.
Regarding that last point, what happens if the person is not convicted of the crime ultimately?
As I read this, Senator, I believe that he's simply not entitled to take advantage of this provisions if the crime is pending.
Assume that he is not ultimately convicted of the crime, could he then have the protective custody order expunged?
I believe so.
Are you confident of that? Because it says... provision of subsection 1 do not apply to a person who is charged with the commission of a crime. And subsection 1 deals with expungement after 3 years or after 1 year, depending on the circumstances.
Well, I think we need clarification from Jack with respect to, is there some other statute that deals with expungement after conviction that we are not tampering with here?
Why don't we, could we just say who is charged with the commission of a crime and is ultimately convicted of that crime?
Why not just say a person who is convicted of the commission of a crime? You're only concerned with the convictions, right? Why not just leave the charge part out?
Yeah, I think I'd probably do it.
That would probably be closer to what you want.
Yeah.
So we could have language, the provisions of subsection 1 of the section do not apply to a person who is convicted
of a crime. I would ask that we...
Convicted of the crime for which he was taken into custody. You have to relate the crime to the custody also.
I'm prepared to get some temporary language ready. I think we do need to check it passed by the sponsor of the bill before.
Certainly.
I want to make sure that we're not interfering with the expungement that deals with the whole conviction piece.
I agree with you. If there's a good reason why we shouldn't do that, we should know it. But yeah. If there isn't anything, definitely.
So let's, are you clear, Jack, what Senator Shoemaker suggested language
yes.
is? Senator Springer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm sorry if I missed this in our earlier hearing, but just briefly, would this have any application whatsoever to civil commitment process? And if so, I think you may recall last session we did change that to trigger or make the commitment easier if a person had been committed on two prior occasions. And there may be something that needs to be explored if we're now sealing records that...
Actually, we're not sealing. We are for people who come in and get held by police, and there's no other proceedings brought. This is to provide an opportunity for them to get expungement of actually being held in protective custody. Isn't that correct?
Well, it applies to those situations, but it also applies, as you'll see in the amendments on line 3, to situations where there has been a formal commitment as well.
Okay. Could apply.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to, we do need to check that by and pass out the new amendments to people who might have an interest since we are having a new version of the bill. We had no one testified in opposition. As I recall, as the original bill came to us, but this... I have a note here that says seals in some questions about sealing in probate court and formal commitment procedure that was discussed. I think we need to check it by the sponsor and suggest that they make consideration of the whole commitment, formal commitment question, and also the conviction issue. Senator Schumaker, I mean, Springer.
Yeah, just briefly, I know we're right on time here, but
That's okay.
I just want to make sure that we create some kind of record, or have created a record, that may guide a court as they, quote, determine that the circumstances and behavior of the applicant warrant setting aside the record. That's not much guidance to a court, and there may be that the sponsors can make a clear statement or be prepared during floor debate to state specifically just what they have in mind.
Jack.
There is some case law on that issue, Senator Springer, as it applies to the criminal statutes. Now, whether it would apply equally to this or not, I don't know, but there would be at least some guidance.
We'll check that out, and check out with the City of Portland. This bill comes to us at, really at the request of a police officer from who works in Portland, and was requested by the Human Resources Committee. So we'll check it out, and that's another important.
It's a good bill. I want to support it.
Well, we need to make sure that with looking at these brand new amendments today, that the words are appropriate and that they are what we think they do. So thank you very much. We'll do a little more.
Return to this.
Checking on that, and we'll set it on for Tuesday night schedule or something of that nature. Okay. I think that we have covered all of our work session bills that are on schedule today. Thank you very much. It is now 1:30. It would be the chair's proposal to take up SJR 17 first. Since there are fewer folks who have come to testify on that one, and I also have promised them, because of scheduling problems, that they would be allowed to go first. Bob Kuntz here. Come on up. And Charles Tracy and and Jack, we don't have, do we have these for the members that I asked?
We have some being sent out. We don't have them quite here yet.
Well, we need them now. We can get them from my office.
Okay.
I don't know what we need to do. Okay. Have a page go down and pick them up and put them on my account.
Any constitution?
I've already read the paper on myself.
Do we have a copy of the Constitution handy? Did you
swap that?
Yeah, I know that.
No, I'm trying to get, I asked the committee members have these little book for your own very own.
Is that what we're working
and
on
we're
right now?
We're waiting.
Our page is down.
Oh, okay. All right. I was.
The big grave on you.
Let's put these under our pillow.
Yes, you may read them aloud at various points in time. It might be useful for you. Let's wait for the page. I'm told they don't have such things on LC. I would request that they go to my office and collect them up, and we'll proceed. Hard to imagine we couldn't have rounded it up somehow this morning. But let's go ahead. Bob.
Yes. With your permission, Madam Chairman, I'd like to briefly relate to this committee some of the experiences that Dee and I have had in the past 9 or 10 years. Though these experiences we discuss with you today are uniquely ours, in a larger and truer sense, they belong to many of our members and are a shared experience. So when we speak of our story, very truly, it is oftentimes their stories. These experiences have a direct bearing upon the proposed legislation before you today. For the record, our name is Bob and Edie Kuntz. Both of us are members of a grassroots citizens group called Citizens for Justice, Crime Victims United. There are a number of our members present here today. We print and distribute over 1,100 newsletters monthly, which is called A Victim's Voice, and of which Dee Dee is the editor. Our membership is somewhat over 800. We are proud of this political organization, whose stated purpose is, quote, to promote a balanced criminal justice system through public awareness and legislative action. As its past president, Dee Dee is also the executive advisor of Crime Victims United. I am presently legislative liaison. Our recent past criminal justice experiences include Dee Dee's presence at virtually every single criminal justice council and subcommittee meeting over the last 3 years leading up to the sentencing guidelines proposal, which you folks are presently studying. Additionally, I was a member of the Governor's Special Commission Against Violent Crime in 1984 and 85 and a member of the Multnomah Probation Project. We have a substantial library of books on crime and victimization and have read innumerable federal, state, and private studies on various aspects of crime. But a real education about crime and criminals did not occur here in Oregon. We paid a priceless tuition for this education. It was our daughter Valerie's life. Because of favorable family circumstances, namely our children were gone, Dee Dee and I were able to investigate personally and in depth the circumstances and personages surrounding Valerie's murder. We spent most of the next 2 years in California, and it took us from the Mexican border to Trail, Canada. We looked at over 100 criminal associates and acquaintances of the man who took her life. His chief crime partner kept a diary and after his stay in, during and after his stay in San Francisco, in San Quentin. We have a copy of that diary. We also have copies of scores of letters written from one criminal associate to another, as well as to and from their girlfriends. We interviewed by the dozens victims of their survivors, witnesses, police, and criminals. We were in many courthouses digging through the musty files of trials from past years. We attended many criminal trials in both the United States and Canada. We found that just because information is presented in court, it does not necessarily mean it is truthful. Conversely, we found that because information is excluded from trial, it does not necessarily mean it's false. In fact, we found that a criminal trial fell far short of the grand search for truth and justice that we had somehow anticipated. What we learned from this odyssey about crime, criminals, and how to treat them in our society radically altered our thinking about the nature of the problem. Principally, it persuaded us that evil exists. It persuaded us that even if we were somehow successful in solving the intractable attitudes and societal problems that we have, we would still have crime and criminals. Those societal ills deserve solving in and of their own merit. Of the criminals we looked at most closely, none were minorities, none were uneducated, none were deprived, at least in a physical or monetary sense. None were slow-witted or physically handicapped. All had essentially the same chance that any white, middle-class kid had growing up in our society in the 60s and 70s. So why did they do crime? And I believe that that can best be explained by a passage from John Abbott's diary while he was in San Quentin. And I quote to you directly. And here it was written on Christmas Eve of 1979 in his cell, and he's speculating on his future. And he says, I quote, I don't know what it is that will ever take the place of the rush of crime. I like it. I like it. Yes, I do. Your children, your neighbor's children, your home, and your neighbor's home deserves to be protected from this type of a man. And that brings us to the present and to our petition before you today. Article 1 of the Oregon State Constitution reads, we declare that all men, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness, and they have at all times the right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in any such manner as they think proper. My paraphrasing of that article reads that all power belongs to the people who are equally valued, that the authority of our government is based on that power, and that the government is instituted for our peace, our safety, and our happiness, and that we can change it any time we wish, so long as we do it democratically. So it says, our government is formed for our peace, safety, and happiness. Case law in Oregon and in other states refers time and again to the fact that the fundamental purpose of government is to protect its citizens. One example of this is in 1963 of Toole versus Gladden, 234 Oregon 1. The petitioner was claiming that his life sentence under 1929 habitual criminal statute violated Article 1, Section 15 of the Oregon Constitution. The court held it did not, but went on to say, quote, the drafters of the Constitution, however, did not include the most important consideration of all, the protection and safety of the people of the state. Such a principle does not have to be expressed as is the reason for criminal law. All jurisdictions recognize its overriding importance. In the next paragraph, they wanted to state, we interpret Article 1, Section 15 of the Oregon Bill of Rights to command and require that Oregon's sentencing laws have as their object reformation, but they do not require that reformation be sought at substantial risk to the people of the state, end quote. So why do we need our proposed amendment? If the very purpose of our government is for our peace, safety, and happiness, if our courts say the most important consideration of all is the protection and safety of the people of the state, why do we need such an amendment? Well, first of all, Oregon is the only one of two states